My name is Luc Caron. I'm the campaigner on Canada-US relations issues for the Council of Canadians.
We need to have better legal protections.
Lots of things have changed since the 80s.
Our Food Inspection Agency, our Department of Health, have failed us miserably.
The U.S. officially, in their current state of economic affairs, needs Canada as well.
We're seeing more and more of those standards simply being adopted by
Canada. Canada has joined the war in Iraq, and we haven't seen that much of a difference in trade.
We've given under these trade agreements American corporations greater rights in Canada than Canadian citizens.
Trade is an important part of every economy. It is necessary to sustain one's own stability. Free trade agreements are placed throughout the world, whether it is the European Union or North America. Canada's most important trading partner has always been the United States. However, trade agreements such as NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, have been argued for their sufficiency ever since their creation. In the next hour, you will hear interviews with Guy Quiron from the Council of Canadians, as well as David Orchard, member of the Conservative Party in Canada, explaining the history of free trade between the U.S. and Canada, its purpose, pros and cons, effects on the Canadian economy, and its real beneficiaries.
Lots of things have changed since the 80s. We might remember that in the mid-80s, Canada was starting to look for a free trade agreement with the U.S., which was eventually extended to Mexico under the North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA. Things have really changed since then. After about a decade of adjusting to NAFTA, and there was less of structural adjustment to do, the business elite in the country, especially the Canadian Council of Chief Executives, is actually at this point looking to go even further. Some people call it NAFTA Plus. Some others call it deeper economic integration. But basically, the Canadian Council of Chief Executives, especially, and the business community in Canada, along with the federal government, is looking to integrate more of our policies, be it trade policies, foreign policies, even social policies, with those of the U.S. Under what would be eventually North American Union. It's a very complex issue. It touches various fields, various angles, various domains of our lives. And in the end, this is actually very problematic for Canadian sovereignty. If we're looking at sovereignty as a mechanism or as a concept in which we can define ourselves, define the way that we want to regulate ourselves, the way that we want to be led by our specific values rather than those of the U.S. And the situation that we have here, unlike the European Union, is actually very different from the European Union, where it didn't have one specific overwhelming entity. You had 15 at the beginning, 15 separate countries, no dominant one, even if you had some more important ones. Under North American Union, as it's being promoted by Tom DiAquino and the Canadian Council of Chief Executives, you would end up having a North American bloc dominated entirely by the U.S. The North American Free Trade Agreement was basically an extension of the Canada-U.S. Free Trade Agreement. When the Canada-U.S. Free Trade Agreement was ratified back in 1988, the U.S. turned to Mexico to negotiate the free trade agreement with their southern neighbors. And Canada, seeing that, just felt that it couldn't be excluded of something that they felt they had won, and joined the talks to create a three-way free trade agreement. The first thing that we have to look at, though, is maybe the use of free trade, because free trade, the term free trade is being used and sounds very positive. After all, you have in that word free, which is good, and trade, which is also good. On the other side, if you look at the agreements themselves, at the text, at their consequences, you notice that it's actually a lot less about free trade and a lot more about rights to invest or the rights promoting rights for investors. And this is exactly what the Canada-US Free Trade Agreement was about, and NAFTA as well after. It was not so much about free trade, and if you go back prior to the ratification of those free trade agreements, you will see that most of the trade between Canada and the U.S. was actually free trade. There was very little barriers to trade, especially on the tariff side. Very few items were subject to tariffs, and those who were subject to tariffs were subject to very low tariffs, beside a few exceptions. This didn't really change. I mean, some of these last barriers have been removed, but the most important impact of the free trade agreements, be it Canada-US or NAFTA, was that it gave rights to investors and basically prevented or removed a lot of Canada's capacity to regulate and to legislate in some domains, such as environment, such as norms and standards and regulations in the country. And it also opened possibility for much of what belonged to the commons, like water, like our healthcare system. Free trade agreements, as they were signed, made them a lot more vulnerable than they were before to privatization and to their availability on the private market. So there hasn't been that many pros, especially for regular citizens, but the cons are still being discovered at this point. And going even further into NAFTA and into this free trade agreement and economic integration would actually increase that vulnerability to the private market forces.
It is said that free trade will bring economic growth. It will stimulate a country and strengthen every sector. However, an important question arises. Who is actually benefiting from it? Is it a regular working class citizen or the head of a multinational corporation?
If you're talking to a NAFTA partisan, that person will tell you that it's been great for our economy, that our imports and exports, basically our trade across the border, has increased, that we have that we increased our productivity, and that basically our economy has greatly improved, especially if you're looking at the gross domestic product. If you're a regular citizen, you haven't seen any of this. Basically, wages have decreased or stayed stagnant for most of the population, except for the 20% of the people with the highest wages. For all the people in the 80% of the lower wages, actually have seen their wages staying stagnant. And for people who have been working in the early 90s or even the late 80s, early 90s to now, I don't think that we have a better quality of life. I don't think we have seen, except in some specific sectors, really trade being improved, being increased that much. Most of the Canada-US trade, we have to remember, is intra-business or intra-corporate trade, where a specific corporation is trading with itself. 85% of the trade that between Canada and the U.S. can be accounted for that specific intra-corporate trade. So basically, as much as we hear a lot about it, and as much as we are told about all the benefits and all the advantages of NAFTA, the regular citizen just hasn't seen any of this. I should say that one of the promises that was made in the 80s during the debate is how wonderful this would be for jobs. This would be, free trade agreement will be a great creator of jobs. We're talking, some were talking upwards to 300,000 jobs being created, net jobs being created. And this hasn't happened. In fact, we have been losing jobs in many sectors that were vulnerable. This is what to be expected once you open your markets in some industries. I'm thinking of textile in particular. So it hasn't amounted to that many jobs being created, if any. Some studies are actually saying it was pretty even. It's just a transfer of jobs between sectors and industries, and wages have increased. So in the end, that's what you have to look at. Canada's GDP, gross national product or gross domestic product might have increased, but we've seen that the benefits of NAFTA actually went to those who promoted it, and it basically went to the let's say frankly, the richest people in the country, and the regular citizens who are not among the richest people of this country have seen very few benefits. And it's problematic, especially since you have those groups right now who are trying to portray NAFTA as a real success and basically say that we have to go even further, where NAFTA actually was a first step towards abandoning our sovereignty. And we've seen that in some instances, especially through Chapter 11, which is the chapter of NAFTA regulating the investor-state dispute mechanism, especially where a foreign company can actually sue the Canadian government for any policy and decision it makes to prevent or to that undercuts its profits. That led to some kind of a chill climate around here as it relates to some policies, environmental policies especially. So what NAFTA Plus would be doing would be undermining even more our national sovereignty and would undermine our ability to legislate and to regulate according to our own priorities, to our own values.
There are many areas that free trade affects, such as our agriculture, our movie industry, and our military.
Farmers were actually somewhat favorable at the beginning, most of farmers, obviously not all of them, to free trade, because this was supposed to guarantee them, as was supposed to guarantee most of Canadian industries, complete access to the U.S. market, which is 10 times more important than ours. So they actually saw it as something very positive. Now, after NAFTA was signed, basically 10 years after NAFTA was signed, 15 years after the Canada-U.S. trade agreement was signed, they don't have it so good right now. I mean, farms are closing, especially family farms are closing, and just cannot sustain the competition with all those agribusinesses. And basically, and I believe that was a year ago last January, for the first time, net farm income was actually negative for farmers in this country, which never happened before. And that's specifically due to the fact that all the industries that are related to agriculture, such as the machinery industries or the seed industry, companies like Monsanto, like Cargill, like ADM in the U.S., have become more and more concentrated and have reduced their own competition, which basically gives them some form of monopoly or oligopoly that help them to control the market of farmers. So the farmers don't really have as much power as they did before, and the fact that that we opened and changed our rules to accommodate market rules in the U.S. Simply accelerated that process, where family farms are disappearing and are not in the possibility or in the position to compete adequately in the agricultural market.
It affects virtually everything that we touch in this country, including everything we eat. When we were first told that when Canada and the United States started negotiating the Canada-U.S. Free Trade Agreement, we were told that agriculture, for example, wasn't going to be part of the deal. That the agriculture minister came out to Western Canada and said that agriculture won't be on the table. But when we get the actual copy of the agreement, agriculture is the longest chapter in it, 58 pages, and there's 100 commitments in the agriculture section to harmonize all of our laws and regulations with those of the United States, including pesticide residues, standards, all of this. And harmonize is defined as to make identical with. So this is a part of the integrating us into the laws and the regulation of a foreign country. So that's how it's, of course, affecting agriculture. We've seen the takeover of our meatpacking industry, 93% now controlled by U.S. Corporations. And then there was a section that said that we can never screen or restrict U.S. investment coming into Canada. So we've seen 10,000 Canadian companies taken over by U.S. owners since the trade agreements have been put into place. Everything from the, you know, the giants on the West Coast, McMillan Bloedel taken over by Weyerhaeuser, Duke Petroleum bought up West
coast transmission, all the natural gas reserves there in British Columbia. And you could walk all the way across the country, one corporation after another. Even the Hudson's Bay Company, which was, you know, involved with the very founding of Canada, is now in talks to be taken over by an American corporation. There are fewer than a dozen major, widely held Canadian companies left listed on the Toronto Stock Exchange. So this is how it's impacting us economically. Of course, culturally, we're seeing a situation where 98% of the films and movies shown in this country are foreign, almost all of those American. We're even seeing the military integration. There are talks going on right now for a NAFTA plus agreement to take NAFTA even further that would essentially make North America one country, which would essentially give us a North American citizenship. Our military are involved in talks for the NORTHCOM agreement, which would put our Army and our Navy under direct U.S. command. So this is part of the process of really seeing Canada cease to exist as a sovereign nation.
The United States have been criticized on many occasions for their trade policies by numerous organizations around the world. The Minister of International Trade, Jim Peters, said recently that Canadians are justifiably shocked at recent U.S. actions in the softwood lumber dispute, adding, "Canada will continue to challenge these actions to ensure that the U.S. abides by its international trade obligations."
I know of other cases where the World Trade Organizations have been very critical of the U.S. protectionism, especially in the steel industry, where the U.S. actually created tariffs and barriers for the import of European steel to protect, once again, their own industries. And the same actually has been going in a few other industries. So this U.S. protectionism hasn't gone unnoticed by the body that they actually helped to create to promote free trade across the world. And they are still not very good at respecting the decisions of the World Trade Organization when they are losing it, as they are not very good to respect the decisions of the NAFTA Administrative Tribunal when they're losing their cases. The United States, by their sheer weight, by their sheer economic importance, feel that they have the freedom to actually protect their industries when they feel that there is a need to, but they still want other countries like Canada and basically all countries they are doing business with in the world to eliminate their own barriers, which creates kind of an imbalance. It's actually furthering the imbalance where one player plays by its own rules and asks the rest of the world to play by a different rule.
The general fear of not complying with the Americans is that they will stop trading with Canada. However, Canada is the largest trading partner with the U.S. on this hemisphere. So the question that stands out is whether or not Americans can afford to lose Canada as their trading partner.
Canada hasn't joined the war in Iraq, and we haven't seen that much of a difference in trade and trade numbers. Once again, this is something that we're being told by the fearmongers, is that the U.S. will retaliate on the trade front if we don't do what they want us to do. And let's remember that the Canadian Council of Chief Executives, which represents the 150 most important corporations in the country, most of them being American multinationals, but still, really want us to do everything that the U.S. administration is asking of us. The Bush administration wanted us to join the war in Iraq. The CCCE wanted us to join the war in Iraq. And the CCCE also wanted Canada to soften its stance so that they could, after the invasion of Afghanistan and in Iraq, that they could bid on the reconstruction, the rebuilding contracts. So everything that the U.S. is asking us to do, our own private sector is supporting. The problem dates back to, and I'm sorry to have to point them out, but to the arrival of the Liberals in power back in 93. One of the first decisions that they had made at that point was to voluntarily, willfully join issues of foreign affairs and trade. And that's why they combined the Department of International Trade and foreign affairs together, because they were separate before. So at this point, the Liberals were recognizing as a government that foreign affairs and international trade were linked together and were dependent on each other. Now, when you have forces of diplomacy and forces of economic growth and promoting economics, capitalism, markets across the world, it was very obvious that economics was a lot more important than diplomacy was. This situation lasted for 10 to 15 years and actually helped trade, international trade, to direct the direction that foreign policy would be going. But let's remember that we still live in a democratic country. It's not only money that leads us, it's also the citizens and the general will. And that's what ultimately our governments have to respond to, and we've seen that very clearly in the matters of the decision that was to be made around the war in Iraq, and we're still seeing it right now with the missile defense, national missile defense program that the U.S. would very much like to see us join, that our business elite wants us to join, but that over 70% of Canadians just don't want to hear about. And at that point, even if our government is interested, and Paul Martin has made numerous comments on his intention and his desire to partner with the U.S. on missile defense, he still cannot do it simply because his electors don't want him to do it. And in the end, that should be a reminder of the power of the citizens and of citizenry over economic forces across the country. The U.S., especially in the state of their current state of economic affairs, needs Canada as well. And it's basically untrue to say that Canada is the only side that would be losing. There was trade before free trade agreements. Let's remember that. It's not like we had isolated economies that didn't deal with each other. We were already the largest trade partners for each other before any trade agreement was signed. And even if NAFTA was to disappear, this wouldn't change either. Our economies are, for better or for worse, integrated at this point. And that NAFTA is there or not won't change actually that much. It will change a lot for investors because they won't be able to impose their will on any country, be it Mexico, the U.S. or Canada, to force them to do their bidding. But otherwise, both countries will still continue to trade with each other, and it might actually be a good wake-up call for Canada to start diversifying its own exports and its own international trade, because one impact of NAFTA was to increase that integration. We are exporting, before NAFTA, I believe we were exporting about 70 to 74% of our exports to the U.S., and now it's about 85% of our exports, so in proportion of what we're producing, we're exporting a lot less in the rest of the world than we do to the U.S., and that's a problem. One of the primary benefits that you learn about in financial economics is to diversify your portfolio, to spread the risk and to make sure that you won't put your eggs in the same basket. And now with NAFTA, we're doing precisely that, and we're making ourselves more and more dependent on the U.S. economy. And I think we have to learn at this point that spreading the risk might be a good thing. We don't necessarily want our economy to tank if the U.S. economy is tanking. And at this point, we need to look at other revenues. But saying that there will not be any more trades and that that the U.S. will just go away if NAFTA was to disappear is basically just fear-mongering.
Numerous attempts have been made to talk to associations and trade groups. However, they refuse to talk to the media, unlike the ones opposed to free trade. This raises the question, why?
We could look back at their history on this. They didn't want to talk about it really right from the first in terms of the content. When I debated the representatives of the pro-free trade push in 1988 and again right through NAFTA in 1993, they really wanted only to talk about, oh, well, free trade's good for you. We can compete. You're a wimp if you're scared to compete and this kind of thing. But they didn't ever want to talk about the actual contract that we signed. And the Canada-U.S. Free Trade Agreement and NAFTA are contracts that we signed, and they have hundreds of pages to them. and they're not free trade. This was the point that I've made over and over again.
Chapter 11 in NAFTA allows American corporations, for the first time in history of any trade agreement, to sue the Canadian government directly for any law or regulations in Canada which they feel causes them loss or harm.
We've had a number of these lawsuits directed against the Canadian government when Canada banned the importation and use of MMT, the gasoline additive that replaced lead, when lead was found to cause health problems. Well, MMT has been found to cause health problems as well. In fact, our Prime Minister of the day, Mr. Chrétien, called it a horrific neurotoxin, and Canada banned the importation of it. Well, Ethyl Corporation of Virginia, that makes the additive, sued the Canadian government under Chapter 11 of NAFTA, and first the Canadian government said, well, we have the right to pass environmental laws, we're not going to be pushed around. But then shortly after, they capitulated. They paid Ethyl $20 million in damages and allowed them to put MMT back in the gasoline in Canada. This is an example of a foreign corporation without any responsibility to Canadians suing the Canadian government and overturning a law passed by the sovereign parliament of Canada.
The question still remains how these companies are able to get away with such an injustice in a democratic society.
They've succeeded in getting through these trade agreements all kinds of laws and powers that they were never able to get through the democratic process, through the back door, if I can put it that way. And this was a comment that was made by Herman Daly, this former senior economist at the World Bank. When he quit in his farewell speech, he slammed these so-called free trade agreements and accused the companies of going through the back door to achieve by undemocratic means what they could not achieve through the open democratic process. So if you had a debate in Parliament about whether we want to sign away our resources or allow foreign corporations to have greater powers than Canadian companies and citizens, well, there would be an uproar and there would be a reaction and there would be opposition. So it's been in their interest to try to keep it quiet. And in my book that I've written on this topic called The Fight for Canada, Four Centuries of Resistance to American Expansionism, I reproduce a document that was leaked out of Brian Mulroney's office when he was starting the free trade push. And in that document, it outlined the strategy the government was going to have to push free trade. And they said that the more Canadians found out about what was in the trade agreements, the more opposition there would be to it. Therefore, their strategy was to never talk about the contents, but just to try to make general statements like free trade is good and free trade will lead to a higher standard of living. These kind of vague generalities, which have proven to be not true as well. We were told we would have a higher standard of living and a greater income for Canadians if we signed the Canada-US Free Trade Agreement and NAFTA. What's happened in the dozen years since, we've seen our standard of living fall. Canada used to be at the top of the UN list of best countries in the world in which to live, and we've now fallen several pegs down. Norway has replaced us. Norway is a country that's refused to join the European Union. It's had two referendums. It stayed out because it wants to keep control of its own destiny in its own hands. It trades around the world, but it has not entered into a free trade agreement, into the free trade zone of the European Union. And instead of giving away its resources, it uses the benefits from its oil and its gas and its other resources to give Norwegians the highest standard of living in the world.
If an individual in Canada wants to push a certain legislative agenda, they would have to undergo a democratic process. However, corporate persons are not held to the same standard as the rest of us.
We've given under these trade agreements, as I mentioned, American corporations greater rights in Canada than Canadian citizens. Canadian companies don't have the right under NAFTA to sue the Canadian government for any law they don't like. They can't sue them at all for laws they don't like. They have to abide by them. But U.S. companies can now sue the Canadian government for laws they don't like. So they have greater powers, these U.S. companies have greater powers in Canada and over the Canadian government than Canadian citizens and Canadian companies. And to me, this is unacceptable, and it's part really of the kind of return to colonial status that Canada has embarked on ever since Mr. Mulroney and followed by the Liberal administration since. They are bound in, they're pursuing this integration of our country into the United States, and it's a return to a loss of the sovereignty of our parliament, the loss of our nation to govern its own affairs, and it's really essentially making us a satellite of the U.S.
In the areas of food and drugs, From a Canadian perspective, the United States are known to have a much lower consumer standard. This makes Canadians ask the question, how free trade is going to affect our own consumer standards in the future?
We're seeing more and more of those standards simply being adopted by Canada, and that was part of the trade agreement, that we would agree to harmonize our standards and regulations with the United States. And of course, when you harmonize with the United States, that means essentially Canada adopting the U.S. standards. So we've seen a drop in the inspections of our products. We've seen us adopting all kinds of U.S. standards. And we, for example, the testing of drugs and the introduction of new chemicals, Canada used to have a standard that was based upon analysis of the possible health impacts. The United States has a standard that's involving the cost equivalent, so if they can show that this new chemical can be economically beneficial, for example, even if it maybe does cause some health problems, but if it causes, it could lead to economic benefits in some way, a chemical will be approved. And so we've tossed out our old standard, which said, well, just a minute, they have to be proven to be safe, regardless of whatever one claims about their economic benefit. So that's just an example of us really moving to a U.S.-based standard. And then, of course, we've seen this in the introduction of the genetically modified seeds. We've closed down our research and agricultural stations across Canada where we used to breed seeds and grains and crops that were made available to farmers without cost and which put Canada near the top of the world's grain-producing countries. And we've closed them down, and now we're turning over those facilities, and even many of the scientists who used to work for the Canadian public are now being picked up by Monsanto and these other companies that are using them to develop their genetically modified seeds that are not in designed for public benefit. Of course, they're designed for the greater profits and greater herbicide sales for Monsanto. We released, for example, genetically modified canola was put on the market without a single peer-reviewed study done of its health impacts on people eating it. And the company argued that it was substantially equivalent to the existing canola. You can't tell the difference by looking at them, so it's pretty much saying, therefore, they don't have to they don't have to do any tests. Like, the drug is released, we have to do tests first on animals and then on selected test groups of humans and before it's released in the public. Instead, this stuff has now just been released without any of those tests, and we're eating it without knowing what the long-term impacts could be on human health. So that's just one, a couple of examples of how we're simply moving into greater and greater U.S. control and adopting, giving up our own standards, giving up our own ways of testing and looking at things, and simply adopting that of the United States, which is much more dominated by these large private corporations.
Chip Tropper, a scientist at Health Canada, was recently fired because he was giving warnings on drugs that were potentially dangerous. This raises the question whether or not the Canadian government is willing or capable of protecting its own citizens the way they should.
Our Food Inspection Agency, our Department of Health, have failed us miserably to be adequate watchdogs. At times we've had key defenders of certain issues. For example, when Monsanto wanted to release their bovine growth hormone in Canada, they'd released it in the United States and they wanted to do so here in Canada. And it was a couple of brave senators, Senator Eugene Whelan and I believe one of your senators right there in Manitoba, Senator Spivak, and others who helped fight that. And of course, Monsanto was not allowed to release their bovine growth hormone in Canada. So those have been kind of examples when our officials have fought back in the public realm. But we have to do more of that. We have to support these people like Mr. Chopra and others who are blowing the whistle, in essence, on what's happening. And, you know, I'm urging everyone to write a letter to the Prime Minister and the Department of head of the Minister of Agriculture and the Department of Health, saying that there should be no more licensing of genetically modified ingredients until we have a labeling requirement and until they're proven safe. And we must review all of these agricultural chemicals, these herbicides, these pesticides that are being sprayed across our country with regard to their impact on human health. You know, we've got cancer rates that are huge across North America. What is the connection between the pesticides and the herbicides we're using and these serious health problems that Canadians are facing? Is there a connection? And if so, we need to know what it is. This kind of review has to be done of these dangerous chemicals that are being used so freely right now.
Canada and the United States are moving in different directions in terms of policies and laws. Therefore, it is important to consider how free trade can work to export the American view and political situation to Canada.
Yeah, you remember when the United States was getting ready to attack Iraq? There was talk in Canada. We had some prominent Canadian figures, including prominent politicians, that said, well, Canada should go along with the United States. We should drop some bombs on Iraq because we trade so much with the United States now, over 85% of our exports going to the United States. So we want to keep the Americans happy and buying our goods, so maybe we should join in this attack on Iraq, even though, as I mentioned, this attack on Iraq was completely illegal. And this idea of going along with the United States was being promoted in Canada as a way of helping to keep our trade moving across the border. I debated one of the former cabinet ministers or former ministers under the Mulroney administration, and he, not that long ago, and he was saying that we should try to be nicer to the United States, and then maybe they would lift the tariff on our softwood lumber or the border closing on our beef. Well, it doesn't work that way. We got that 27% tariff when Brian Mulroney was in power, and so no one could have been nicer to the United States than Mr. Mulroney.
If you're looking at democratic tendencies, I mean, people really want their government, which they feel is their own representative, to have a say in those domains of regulation and legislation according to their own values. And free trade agreements or rights of investors agreements, like we should be calling them, is basically removing the capacity, that ability to shape their own environment. And the U.S., responding to their electorate, responding to their political founders, are actually doing what other countries feel they should have the right to do but can't anymore because they signed down these agreements, and they are afraid that the U.S., which they still see as a major player in their trade game, to retaliate in some fashion. So yeah, we have two different sets of rules, and this is a flaw inherent to these trade agreements.
This, to me, is a betrayal of the work and the energy and the dreams and the visions of our forefathers and the men and women who worked to build Canada into a sovereign nation.
Canada and the United States were both part of GATT, now known as the World Trade Organization, which exists since the 1940s. Under the GATT rules, the Americans cannot retaliate against Canada. It is also a fact that Canada's economy was in a better shape under GATT when trading with the US, because there are many other countries involved. One possible solution could be to go back to that agreement, which is much safer than NAFTA, according to David Orchard, because there is no clause that allows private American organizations to sue the Canadian government, and we have much more latitude to govern our own affairs under the multilateral arrangement than we have now under NAFTA, he said.
We need to have better legal protections and tougher consumer laws and greater, much greater concern about the safety of products before they're released. Our Canadian Food Inspection Agency has failed miserably to protect Canadians for just on this issue of genetically modified ingredients. We should have a labeling requirement in Canada, as the Europeans do. Any foods containing genetically modified ingredients are labeled such in Europe, so people can look at them, and then they don't buy them. So Europe is essentially won't buy any of our canola because it's all been contaminated by genetically modified canola. We can no longer produce any organic canola or any conventional canola either. In fact, I'm on the board of an organic farmers association in Saskatchewan that's suing Monsanto for the destruction of the organic canola industry in Saskatchewan because of how their drift from their genetically modified Roundup Ready canola has spread over the whole Western Canada. So the duty and the responsibility of our Canadian Food Inspection Agency to be inspecting these kinds of products before they're released, they shouldn't be licensed. until they're proven to be safe. And now Monsanto wants to release a genetically modified alfalfa, Roundup Ready alfalfa. Well, alfalfa is a key tool for organic agriculture. It's a key tool to replenish the soil. If they're able to take control of that plant as well, it'll be a huge blow to the entire move towards sustainable agriculture in Canada. So what we have to do is demand of our federal government that they not license any more genetically modified ingredients until they're proven safe. We have to do a review of all of the herbicides and the pesticides in use in Canada. This was recommended by Charles Katch's environmental report a few years ago. He was the Liberal chair of that, that recommended that we review all of the herbicides and pesticides in use. Many of those haven't been reviewed for 20 or 30 years, and we don't know the health impacts of these chemicals on the consumers that are eating the food or those of us who are breathing these residues in the air. So those are just a couple of things that we have to demand much, much tighter control of. And over the longer term, we have to insist that Canada adopt and follow its own regulations and not simply allow its industries to be taken over from south of the border. We could step out of those agreements, but I'm calling for us to do a comprehensive review. And of course, this was part of my aborted agreement with Peter McKay when he became the leader of the Progressive Conservative Party, was that our party would do a review of the impact of these agreements on Canada's sovereignty, on our economy, and on our environment. And out of that review could come a decision that if we wish to get out of these agreements and go back to the multilateral framework, then we could do exactly that. And I think we should, instead of giving all our resources south across the border, we should be using our resources in Canada. We could have all kinds of industries. I'm a farmer. I can't even buy a Canadian-made combine anymore. Or combines from the United States cost us a large chunk of money just in terms of the exchange rate on the dollar, and we don't have that industry here. We're a big market. We should have those kind of industries in Canada. We were once the Western world's third largest shipbuilding nation after the Second World War, and now our shipyards are sitting empty while our shipping magnates like Paul Martin and the others buy their ships in Korea or Japan. We could have these kind of industries, even a Canadian automobile. We've got cutting-edge technology out in British Columbia, the Ballard fuel cell technology, to produce a car that's much cleaner. Smaller countries than Canada have built on the automobile industry. A movie industry, I mentioned that earlier. We need to have an industry that we see Canadian films reflecting our reality on the screen, instead of the fact that we now have our theater chains owned almost entirely by American corporations and they show American films in them. Reflects a very different reality, and it's all in many times, you know, there's been this information coming out about from the Pentagon, got it out that the Pentagon's influence on Hollywood when they want to promote a war or the attack on Iraq or something, they are able to funnel money to Hollywood and then get a message that would serve to support the kind of American attacks on the Third World that we're seeing, the occupations of Afghanistan, the occupation and the crushing of Iraq and other Third World countries. This is not a direction that most Canadians want us to go. We need to be a voice for international law. It's completely illegal for countries to use military force against another country unless it's in self-defense or unless it's been approved by the United Nations, and neither of these, of course, applies in the American attack on Iraq. Canada needs to be a voice for the rule of international law, and to do all of that, we need to have some control of our economy here if we're going to be an independent player in the world. We can't simply allow all of our companies to be taken over by U.S. owners and then pretend we're an independent country, because it won't happen. It's not possible. We have to build these industries here. We have to stand on our own two feet, and we have to take a position in the world that reflects what Canadians want our country to be.
One principle that Canada should be adopting, I don't want to give the impression that trade is bad, because trade, international trade, is good. It's the way it's conducted that can actually worry about. And when we are pushing for free markets, and we're pushing for basically a dogma and ideology of neoliberalism over any concerns for its impact on societies, on citizens, on the communities, there has to be some reflection around it. And this is why we are promoting, in the Council of Canadians, a philosophy of fair trade, where profit and maximization of growth is not the primary element to take into consideration, but also the well-being of communities and citizens. we want the economy and economics to serve the public good and not our democracy to serve the well-being of the economic system that we have around. So fair trade, the principle of fair trade has to be adopted by Canada and by other countries in the world, and we know it's going to be a challenge to make most governments have this change of heart and start thinking about their citizens rather than the few multinationals which are putting pressure on them on various issues. But this is where we have to start.
A common solution to this complex issue has been thought about for decades. However, actions are required immediately in order for Canadians to keep our own identity. You have heard a radio documentary on Canadian trading relations with the United States. My name is Bojan Dulabic, and you are listening to CKUW's The Beat, 95.9 FM.